everyone, and welcome back to the second episode of the Game Reactor Show. I think last week's episode I mentioned that this was going to be a weekly thing. Turns out it was going to be a bi-weekly thing. So yes, it's been 2 weeks since the last one, but we're finally back. I say we, I'm hosting as usual, but I'm alongside my co-host, Mr. Alex Hopley. How are you today, Alex?
Hello, I'm very good. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, whenever, wherever you're listening to this. Hope you're doing well. Hope you've had a good week. Have you had a good week, Ben?
It's been an interesting week, to say the least, and one that I'm hoping is going to get significantly better when tomorrow rolls around, because we're recording this on Thursday, which means tomorrow is Tears of the Kingdom, Tears of the Kingdom launch date. It's very exciting. But we'll talk more about Tears of the Kingdom later. We have a few different topics we want to cover today. But we're going to kick things off with news. But before we even get to that, a quick, should we say, disclaimer, you know, something like that, just to touch on something that's changed a little bit.
Bit of admin,
that's it. We previously were going to launch this podcast across Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all these different things, but we've had a bit of a change of heart, and we're going to be doing it specifically on Game Reactor now. So if you want to listen to the podcast, you'll be able to find it on your local Game Reactor region, and that's where you'll find new episodes on a bi-weekly basis, until further notice, at the least. So, if you're looking for the new episode, this is exactly where to find it in the future. But yeah, now that that admin's out of the way, let's talk about some news, shall we, to kick things off. Because it's been another interesting and busy week across the game and games and entertainment industry as a whole. Although today, we're going to be talking mainly about game stuff, I think. And one of the first things that I want to talk about, because it's really quite fresh right now and it feels like an announcement is going to come imminently, and hopefully this won't be outdated tomorrow when this podcast goes live. Exactly, it probably is, but here we go. Mortal Kombat 12 or Mortal Kombat 1? What are we calling this game?
The next Mortal Kombat game, I think, is the safest bet. But yeah, they've been sort of teasing this out ever since it was unceremoniously announced back in March, I want to say. Maybe earlier, when we knew the next Mortal Kombat game was confirmed via like a financial report. And so since then, NetherRealm have sort of quietly been aware that we know, and they know that we know, and so we know that they know that we know. So now they're sort of raring to go on what they've got. And apparently, according to the latest information dropped today, well, Thursday of this week, you know, yesterday if you're listening right now, is that it's going to be called Mortal Kombat 1, not Mortal Kombat 12, and it's looking at maybe a release date in September. Now, this is with a spoonful of salt, because obviously these are leaks that are coming at us and not official information from NetherRealm itself. But it does seem exciting. It does seem like we're going to get something official any time now. It might even drop while we're recording this, knowing our luck. But, you know, it could be anyway.
It could. And it's a really interesting one, because if they do decide to reboot Mortal Kombat, there is so much narrative and lore that is going to be sort of reset. So, you know, I wonder how they're going to do this, if this is going to be the case. I absolutely adore Mortal Kombat as a fighting game series. I think
it's my favourite.
I would agree. It's my favourite as well. You know, Street Fighter is great. Tekken's great. They're all fantastic. You know, Injustice, all these other brilliant fighting series out there. But for me, Mortal Kombat has always been the gold standard. So whether this is the 12th installment, 12th mainline installment, should we say, because there has been a lot of other Mortal Kombat games that aren't strictly numbered and part of the, you know, the mainline series of games, whether it's that or a brand new reboot, either way I'm very excited. Now hopefully it won't be too long until we hear more about it either, because yeah, as we said, they've really been cranking up these little bits of teasers and tidbits of information they've been sharing, and it's about time, because the way that they announced, as you said earlier, the way that they announced this game officially, bearing in mind, with that short little note in like a fiscal report, was incredibly disappointing. Incredibly disappointed, because Mortal Kombat is a huge franchise and it deserves to be in the limelight. So hopefully we'll know more about this game in the coming, as you say, maybe even hours. Who knows? Yeah. But hopefully it'll be soon. If not, maybe they're teasing really early and they're looking towards like a summer announcement. But either way, it looks like it's going to be happening soon, with like, you know, quotation marks around it, should we say.
Anytime vaguely around, you know, the next day to week to month. But what do you think about them if they are rebooting it? I think that's, part of me thinks, yeah, it's been a while, because it's been 12 years, if you want to feel old, since Mortal Kombat 9 sort of reset the timeline, because even though we call that game MK9 now, it just came out under the Mortal Kombat banner in 2011, and so it gave you like a new start. It went over the first four games, I think, in terms of plot. And so are we going to just get that again 12 years later? Because I think I know what happened at the end of Mortal Kombat 11 story-wise. You know, the timeline gets reset and all that. But do we not have more space to play around with? Or is it time to reset? I've got no clue. I just think it might be interesting to get your thoughts on that. Because that's something that I was mulling over in my head, is that is 12 years enough now? Because it feels like it's only been three mainline entries since we've had a full reset of the timeline again.
It does seem a little bit predictable when you phrase it like that, doesn't it? You know, they think that the game, you know, we get three or four different mainline installments and then NetherRealm decides to just straight up reboot it again.
Yeah.
So, you know, I hopefully they're looking at a different way to approach this situation, whether or not it is, as you say, you know, like a full reboot, like back to square one, the last, you know, 30 years of Mortal Kombat is behind us and we're starting from scratch, or whether it is just resetting the timeline and we're doing something similar to what happened, as you said, 12 years ago. Who knows? But either way, it's exciting. And I hope that the game is equally as fun as all the other Mortal Kombat games we've had as of late, because for me, whenever it comes to a Mortal Kombat game, when it comes to a fighting game, when it comes to couch co-op, not necessarily co-op, but, you know, playing against one another locally, like, I want to play Mortal Kombat. You know, Tekken's great, like I said, Injustice is great, Street Fighter's great, but for me, Mortal Kombat's the one. So I'm glad that we're getting a new game. I'm glad that it's hopefully going to be coming soon. I'm glad that we're going to be getting to hear more about it in the coming hours. But let's talk about the next thing on our list, and I think we'll take a little bit of a segue, because we were talking about fiscal reports earlier, and reports.
Nice.
Yeah, no.
Getting a segue, you know.
Yeah, fiscal reports are pretty dull, generally speaking. But it's, you know, when we get to the end of these quarters and whatnot, publishers like to release these big fiscal reports talking about what happened in the last quarter and whatnot. And one of them was EA. Now, EA is quite a predictable publisher. I say quite. That's probably a bit of an understatement. It's a very predictable publisher, because we know what we're getting from EA pretty much on a yearly basis. It's always new sports games, and they always come out generally around the same time. FIFA, or EA Sports FC, is probably going to be coming out in September time, as of, you know, every FIFA game for the past millennia or whatever. F1 is a June game, and so forth. And while we know that's going to be happening, they've released this latest fiscal report talking about what's going to be coming up in the future. And the one of the games they haven't said is going to be in that list is Dragon Age Dreadwolf. Now, I don't think many people were necessarily expecting Dragon Age Dreadwolf to actually be here this year, or this, you know, this next 12 months. You were hoping.
I was hoping beyond hope. I was huffing the copium, really, if we're being, you know, honest about it. I was hoping beyond hope that maybe we could get it before, like, sort of early next year, like at the absolute earliest. But because of all that, you know, stuff about the development going really well that we've had over the past year, like, it's really great. Everyone's, you know, holding hands and working together, and we're going to get this game out, and it's going to be real, and it's going to be great. And so I guess I was just hoping beyond hope. But I think, yeah, realistically, no, I wasn't expecting it. But,
and it is an interesting thing, because they said that it's not going to be coming for the next fiscal year, which, you know, the fiscal year of 2024 will now start in April 2024, which means that we've got essentially until next summer before this game is probably going to make its debut, at the earliest. But that, and I think that's the key thing, is at the earliest, because I don't think we're going to see, I don't know whether we're going to see Dragon Age Dreadwolf 2024 at all. I think we're looking at a 2025 release at the earliest myself.
Sheesh.
For the simple reason that they haven't really showed anything about the game off, and this is a game that, you know, EA is one of those developers that, when it comes to sports titles, they're very comfortable, should we say. You know, you don't really get anything particularly different when it comes to EA sports games. They're all they're usually very high quality sports games, but they're usually very similar to the ones we've had beforehand. But when it comes to actual sort of mainline, different, unique IPs, they need to be very careful with them, because, well, we've seen what happens when they mess up a Battlefield and the sort of disasters that causes for them. So we'll have to see when it's going to be coming out. Maybe this is a game that we can expect an announcement in greater depth at, well, during the summer events that are on their way.
Maybe it's the Game Awards.
Exactly. Maybe it's a Game Awards thing in December this year. But either way, hopefully it's not going to be too long until we hear more about Dragon Age Dreadwolf, because this is one of the biggest games, I guess, sort of in the near future. It's very exciting.
it's a bit of a reform for, it's a bit of a, hopefully a return to form for BioWare, because as you say, like with their last sort of couple of hits, I suppose, Anthem is a game that we all like to forget, hope to forget, because it was one of the most dreadful launches I think EA has experienced or games have experienced in the last, I want to say, 5 years. Anthem 2019, I believe, 2018.
Around then,
even
yeah.
Earlier, perhaps, around then. But, and then we're looking at, you know, Mass Effect Andromeda as well, which is sort of, you know, history's been kinder to Mass Effect Andromeda than perhaps it was at the beginning, but it still wasn't seen as a very, it wasn't seen as the same caliber as the original trilogy. And so for BioWare now, you're sort of hoping that Dragon Age Dreadwolf and the next Mass Effect, which will come out in 2032 at this rate, is going to be some form of return to what was.
You'd hope. And I think that's the key thing about EA. You know, EA is a very big publisher. They can do this thing where they can allow their developers a little bit of freedom because they've had a lot of failures in the past. And we're seeing it, I think, here with Dragon Age and BioWare. And I think we're also seeing it a bit with DICE and Battlefield, because there's no mention of Battlefield in that fiscal year report whatsoever either. There's no mention of it in the next 12 months. And I don't think we're going to be getting a Battlefield in the imminent future either, because again, they can't afford another disaster of a Battlefield game. They just physically can't.
Yeah. They have to go back to the drawing board there.
Exactly. They need to get it right on this next turn. So it's an interesting one. Either way, we sort of got an idea of what the next year of EA looks like. We've already had PGA Tour. We've already had Jedi Survivor, Lord of the Rings, Heroes of the Middle Earth. I want to say that just came out, or maybe it comes out tomorrow. I saw the launch trailer recently, but it's a mobile game and it's basically here. Then we've got Super Mega Baseball 4 coming up very soon, F1 in June, Immortals of Aveum in the summer, Madden is probably going to be at the end of the summer, just before the NFL season kicks off. EA Sports FC, as we've said, is probably going to be a September release, as FIFA games previously used to be. And then NHL 24 is set for Q3 of fiscal year 2024, so probably by, you know, November, winter time this year, something like that. Which only leaves two other unannounced games that are in EA's slate for this year. One of them's being an EA Sports title and one's being a racing title. Now, EA hasn't not announced either of them, but there's plenty of rumour and speculation as to what these are. One being a UFC game and the other being a WRC game. So, plenty of sports titles coming up. And if you're looking for something different, essentially you've got to put all your hopes and dreams on Immortals of Aveum, which is seemingly going to be a very exciting game. But anyway, enough of EA. Let's move on and talk about something a little bit different. And I think this is a good opportunity to talk about a bit of a double bill, actually. Because on one hand, well, I say on one hand, we're going to talk a little bit about PS Plus and Game Pass for a second. Because on one hand, we have PS Plus who's announced their next month of games. And it is stacked. Like, it's one of those stacked months of games I've ever seen. I can't believe that they're giving all this stuff away as part of the service. It's unbelievable. But then to add to that, we have Redfall and Game Pass. Now, Redfall is a game that came out a couple of weeks ago, or last week, and well, it was met with a lot of criticism from both fans and critics. It was a game that has not been good for Arkane, and Arkane's faced a lot of heat and attention for it.
And, ridicule from other developers, even, I
know. Ridicule from other developers, yeah. And we're going to talk about Redfall and Xbox in a whole in a moment's time. But the point is that Redfall is absolutely massive on Game Pass, isn't it?
Huge, yeah. Second biggest launch of 2023, I think. Which is only outdone by, I want to say, Atomic Heart, which is pretty big, I think, considering the fact that the reviews came out. They, you know, the conversation, as we'll say, I guess, pointed quite negatively in Redfall's direction. And that just left this sort of stodginess, I want to say, around it, where if the game comes out and its reviews are already hitting fours and fives across the board and saying it's a real disappointment from Arkane Austin that's produced, you know, Prey in the past, and Arkane as well is associated with greats like Dishonored, Dishonored 2, Deathloop was very good, then you've got this sort of thing of, well, it's, at least for me and a few people I know who are very big Arkane fans, were sort of just wary about even diving into it because I don't think they even wanted to taint the legacy in their minds. But then I suppose if you've got it on Game Pass and you can just sort of play it and go in, why not? It was one of the biggest advertised Game Pass games for this year. It was sort of the thing that people would play until Starfield came out for a lot of us, thinking that it was going to be good going in before we knew about the disappointment that it would be. But it's still the fact that it still pulled off these numbers, even after the reviews and the negative press, proves that really, on Game Pass, people will try anything because it's there on Game Pass.
Absolutely. It's really surprising to see. I mean, yes, it's a AAA game, and it's a day one launch on Game Pass, which is all really exciting and interesting, and that's most likely the reason why it's found its acclaim. But yeah, on the other hand, we have PS Plus, and the reason why I wanted to talk about both of them is because, yes, Game Pass, we know it's an established property, and everyone loves Game Pass, and it does so many different things that's all exciting. But PS Plus has kind of been a bit up and down. It's always been good at giving you those sort of monthly three or four games, but as for a wider sort of subscription service, it didn't really become that exceptional until it rebranded itself last year. And this month is just a continuation of that improvement, because the amount of games that are coming to PS Plus, extra and premium, bearing in mind, not just essential, but extra and premium, the slightly more premium tiers.
Yeah, you'll have to pay a bit extra, I think. On the premium, it's something like £99.99 British pounds for the year, and I think extra lands you about £70 for the year as well. So you're looking at a more expensive version, definitely. But as you say, what we're getting here, not to tread on the toes of what we're getting in next month, but it does look like it's beginning to be more and more worth that extra cost.
Absolutely. If you love first-party games, if you love AAA titles, then this is like a month that you cannot possibly miss. Dishonored, Death of the Outsider, Dishonored 2, Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, The Evil Within 2, all three of the latest Tomb Raider trilogy, Watch Dogs Legion, Wolfenstein Youngblood, like the amount of games, and that's just the ones I'm picking off. There are so many really impressive games. So this is a really impressive month, and it's interesting to see that this is how Sony is continuing to support this platform. And hopefully, going into the summer, it's going to just get even better. But we'll have to keep tabs on it, because if this is a sign of what's to come, I'm going to be playing a lot of PlayStation in the near future.
It's catching up. It was concerning at first, because when last year they do this big launch and they say we're going to be like Game Pass, but you have Game Pass saying we're going to give you Starfield and Redfall on day one for this monthly price that you will pay. Whereas I think PlayStation's only game when it started out with this extra and premium was Stray. And then for a while, there wasn't anything that was drawing eyes to PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium for those day one games. And then we got Chia on day one. And now I think it is starting to catch up in the game library stuff, but I would still like to see a few more big day one games that you can get your hands on straight away through paying this extra price. Because it's all well and good to say, well, yeah, I can get Horizon Forbidden West, but if I have to wait a year from release, someone who's going to be a Horizon Forbidden West fan is going to buy that straight out of the gate anyway. So it would be nice to see that more perhaps consumer-friendly, because it's all well and good for the business to say, well, we like getting our money from the people who want to buy it instantly, and we also would like to get money from people who are going to buy that subscription because they want that game later down the line. But it's perhaps, I think to see that more consumer-friendly approach of like, here you go, no matter if you're an Uber fan or if you're just going to try out the game, you get it day one for that same cost. Have at ye, go down, play the game, whatever you want. That, I think, would be really nice to see from Sony and really just catch it up to Game Pass, which would be then worrying for Xbox, as we'll get into later, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we move on to our topics for the day, let's talk a little bit, very quickly, bear in mind, about what's going to be happening over the next sort of, I say month, it's maybe month, yeah, just over the next month, because we're getting towards the summer of gaming, when we get all these big showcases. What the time period that would usually be crowned as E3, which is now not E3 because E3 has been cancelled, we're still going to get tons of showcases and exciting events. And the reason why I want to talk about it a little bit today is because we're getting close to it, and people are starting to tease about what they're going to be showing and what's going to be happening. And well, being a Game Reactor, we're going to be covering it all extensively. But for anyone wondering as to what you have to look forward to in this sort of early to mid-June period when all these showcases are going to be taking place, we have the big Jeff Keighley Summer Game Fest show on June 8th, the Xbox Game Showcase on June 11th, which will be followed up by a Starfield-specific Direct, a Ubisoft Forward on June 12th, the PC Gaming Show on June 11th, the Guerrilla Collective, which is all about indie games, on June 7th, There's also going to be a Devolver Digital Showcase sometime in June. Devolver hasn't actually said a specific date as to when that's going to be yet, but it's going to be happening in June. And then there's also sometime, maybe late May, early June, we don't actually know a specific timeline for this either, but there's also going to be, by the sounds of things, a PlayStation Showcase as well, which, you know, if you're looking forward as to what's going to be coming for PlayStation later this year, Spider-Man, probably something about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, although that's probably going to be sort of early 2024, then that's the place to be for those things. But either way, the point is, there's going to be tons of news, tons of information. So while everything's all about Zelda right now, give it a month and things are going to be changing significantly as we all get really excited and anticipated about what's coming up.
Yeah, it's the hype season, isn't it, really, for gaming? I think sort of like May and June. And even with the death of E3, you know, rest in peace. But it's going to be remembered as the time that you're still going to be excited. Late May, early June, you're still going to get these events. The PlayStation event as well is even rumored to have, even though like Spider-Man and Final Fantasy might be enough if it's exciting enough to keep people talking about Sony, I think they're going to need something more, and I think they know that. And there's a lot of rumors right now about potential that something more could be. Some people are saying it's Metal Gear Solid 3 Remake as a timed exclusive. People are saying it's Bloodborne. I don't believe it's Bloodborne, just to get that out of the way. I don't believe we're getting Bloodborne. I'm fully, you know, I might huff the copium on Dragon Age, but I'm not huffing it on Bloodborne. I think that is a one and done. I think we're done with that. But either way, as I say, PlayStation are probably going to pull something out of the bag here, I think at least, because it just looks absolutely stacked looking at that card. Like, if you look at said card like it's a UFC fight, never mind. I don't think there's going to be a fight between, you know, Phil Spencer and Jim Ryan at this main stage of Summer Games Fest.
Well,
but there is going to be a lot of stuff to look at. There's going to be a lot of games that are hopefully going to be shown more of, a lot of games that might be revealed. We're going to see Starfield, which is really, I think, where we're going to know whether this game is going to be Bethesda broken at launch, or whether it's going to be, you know, the second coming of gaming Christ that people are hoping that it can be to save Xbox from its bad rep of launches in recent years.
I think this is actually a perfect place to move on to one of our topics. We're going to talk about Zelda, but I think we'll cap off the podcast today talking about Zelda. So let's move on to one of our main topics, our big topic, which is about the console wars. Because we're kind of talking about it already. So essentially, the question here is, are the console wars dead? Now, the reason why we've been thinking about this as of late is because following the whole Redfall debacle, Phil Spencer went onto Kinda Funny, did an interview with the guys over there, and he gave some very interesting and honest opinions about where Xbox is right now. And essentially, when you boil it all down, Phil Spencer essentially said that Xbox is not looking to compete with PlayStation and Nintendo when it comes to game releases. When you think that Xbox is one of three major console providers, and the fact that Nintendo has never really been a contender against PlayStation and Xbox's battle, it makes you think that Xbox, you know, Microsoft and Xbox have sort of just given up a little bit. And they're like, you know what? We're not going to outdo Sony in first party titles. We're not going to be able to compete with Nintendo and what they do on their quite unique platform. But instead, we're going to lean and we're going to try and expand our gaming ecosystem elsewhere, which is where it comes into this topic of cloud gaming and Game Pass and bringing titles to PC and all these different things. So I'm going to throw a really broad question at you then, Alex, and ask you simply the question I started this with. You know, are the console wars dead?
Well, that is a big question. It's a bit too big for I think we would need a podcast in and itself to take apart that in about 10 hours, you know, that question of, you'd really need to research it. But from my own unresearched, you know, unqualified position, I'd say yeah. I think if Phil Spencer comes onto this podcast with, you know, he's got his hoodie on, he looks like, you know, he looks really defeated almost in the actual video and the kind of funny interview, and he's going, you know, we lost the console war in the Xbox One generation, which is what he said, which is kind of true. If you look at sort of, if, you know, I remember that time vividly of the idea of getting an Xbox One back in the day of the 2013 launch model, especially because you had to buy the Kinect with it and you had to use it as a multimedia streaming thing. Perhaps that was a bit ahead of its time. Perhaps it was just a bad idea. It doesn't matter. It meant that the PS4 was the console for gaming, and that's what it was perceived as. So you can make the argument that really they lost. I think it is massively too defeatist, though, to say we're not in the business of out-consoling Sony or out-consoling Nintendo. We're not going to try and, you know, saying it's not as simple as making great games that are well-received. Well, Mr. Spencer, if we're honest, we need to see that in the Xbox Series generation, because I think the best reviewed like Xbox sort of major talked about game from Xbox this year is Hi-Fi Rush, which was shadow dropped, which I think led to a lot of people going, oh, this is a lovely surprise, 9 out of 10. However, if you look at like Redfall, and there's a lot of concerns around Starfield now, and the absolute, like, you know, bonfire that was Halo Infinite's launch, we need to see proof that actually we've put out a great game and it's not helped us. And so we're going to move on to this cloud gaming stuff. Can they make that back? I don't know. It seems like everyone now sits in their own sort of corner, and they're very unlikely to move out of it no matter what you do.
I would agree. I think that right now, you know, for the longest time, there's always been that sort of jostling in the generations. You know, PS2 was generally better than Xbox. Well, I guess it was just the Xbox at that time, right? Just the base Xbox. And PS2 generally outperformed it. But then Xbox 360 came out, and it was the console to have over the PS3. The PS3 was a fine console, but the Xbox 360 had all these great games, and people wanted to play on the Xbox 360 with its better controller and all these different things. But then, as we said, you know, we get to the PS4 generation, and all of a sudden the Xbox One is just not up to snuff. The Xbox One X, on the other hand, was a brilliant console, but that came a little bit down the line. But they lacked all the first-party titles. They lacked reasons to specifically buy an Xbox One. And the PS4 sold absolute boatloads, like 120 million units or whatever over its full run commercially. And then we get to this generation. And no one's going to tell you that the Xbox Series X is significantly worse than the PS5, because they both have their own strengths. They're both great consoles. But if you had to go to the shop today and you had to choose between a PlayStation 5 and an Xbox Series X, which would you choose? It's the PlayStation 5. For the simple reason that everything you can do on an Xbox Series X, you can pretty much do either on an Xbox One X or on a PC, or even cloud, via the cloud. Whereas the PlayStation 5, you buy the PlayStation 5 to play PlayStation 5 games, like Horizon Forbidden West, God of War Ragnarok, you know, all these incredible games that are really well loved, incredibly well made. You go out of your way to play Sony's platform, whereas Xbox aren't doing that. And yeah, you know, Xbox is working on first party titles, and yes, we have Starfield to look forward to, but when you look at the recent history of Xbox and what Xbox Game Studios are doing, it's hard not to be a little bit concerned about Starfield, because they have, you know, 343 Industries behind Halo is one of the biggest studios in the Xbox Game Studios family, and they botched the Halo Infinite launch. There's no other way to put it. They've botched it. It came out and it was an interesting multiplayer experience, but they've basically not supported it in the 18 months since it came out. It's been very, very limited support. And then you go to Redfall and you see what Arkane have done, and it's like, you know, what exactly is going on here? Does Xbox need somebody like an executive in the Xbox Game Studios family to properly regulate and keep these developers on track? Because right now, when you're putting all of this, you know, giving all this freedom to the developers and allowing them to do what they do, is it actually working for Xbox? Because it's hard to see that from a consumer standpoint and from our standpoint in the media. It's hard to see that it's succeeding right now, isn't it? It doesn't look like it's working, this format.
Well, Matt Booty is the guy who's meant to be the sort of like executive. He's the head of Xbox Studios, I believe. So he will be the guy who's meant to be sort of involved in making sure that the different studios are working up to the deadlines that Microsoft's setting them and stuff like that. I'm not in the business of going, this guy isn't doing up to his job, this guy's not doing that, because we don't know. We don't work at Xbox. We don't work at Microsoft. We don't work behind the scenes. But what we do know is that basically, at the minute, it's looking like Xbox's roster of first-party recent games, especially for the Series S and X, is not stacking up to what PlayStation can bring out. Moreover, I think, you know, lovely little wordplay there, I guess, but I think that the console wars might be dead to us, but I'm not sure I believe Phil Spencer thinks that they're over, or at least Xbox thinks that they're over, because why else are they trying to buy Activision Blizzard? Why are they trying to make these huge deals if they believe that there's no point in even trying to compete? And yes, you can go to the cloud gaming and things like that, but the idea then is that surely they would have more first-party games that come out on the Xbox Series S and X that are better or at least more appealing or can match the appeal of Sony's first-party lineup. I think that there's a case to be made that Xbox doesn't believe it's done yet, that Phil Spencer can come out and, you know, he can roll over and say, yeah, you guys win, you know, we're just the nice guys that are just trying to make cloud gaming for everyone. But at the end of the day, there's still, you know, there's still a buck to be turned, there's still money to be made through console gaming, because not everyone, especially on Xbox's side, because especially in the West, Xbox is still synonymous with gaming. You know, you have an Xbox, and rather than maybe like a beastly PC. So I'm not sure they believe that the console wars are dead, but we'll see. They might just fully go into the cloud gaming. That might be how that money is made from now on, and PlayStation, you know, keeps putting out those first party exclusives. I don't know, but I think there's that case there. There's that little part of me that doesn't think that it's fully over.
I would agree. I think that the Activision Blizzard thing is the major tell that Xbox aren't done, because you don't spend $70 billion on something without the intention of using it to your full advantage. So,
well, maybe if you got Microsoft money, you do.
Microsoft money is a different kind of money, I will say. Yeah. They are absurdly rich, but no, surely there'll be a lot of investors over at Microsoft that wouldn't be interested in approving a $70 billion deal if they weren't confident that it wouldn't make that money back. And Xbox is a highly profitable part of Microsoft's portfolio still. It still rakes in the cash.
Oh yeah. You know,
Game Pass is still massively successful for Microsoft and for Xbox. So it's, you know, it's not like, you know, Xbox is failing or something. It's not like that. It's just that they're clearly not doing something correct. And I say that because the Xbox Game Studios family is enormous. Like, the amount of developers that are in this publisher's sort of portfolio is unbelievable. And yet, we just don't really get any games from them. And that's the thing that really concerns me about it. And that's why I think there needs to be somebody more hands-on with the Xbox Game Studios developers and trying to set these timelines and keep tabs on things. Because between not getting any new games or getting very few new games and games missing deadlines when, you know, they set these release windows and then they don't hit these release windows, you can't tell me that there's somebody at Microsoft somebody who's, you know, relatively interested in games that played Redfall and went, you know, this probably ain't going to be the
this
game.
Ain't it.
Yeah, yeah, this probably isn't the game that we're hoping it's going to be. Because Redfall has its performance issues, and they, you know, they need to be mentioned because games are, for whatever reason, are launching with increased performance issues as of late, and it's a concerning problem. It is, but
especially on PC, there's been, I mean, pretty much every AAA release this year on PC has been, sorry, we're broken at launch, we're going to really try hard and fix it. But if you're a PC player, sucks to be you. If you're a console player, you're probably still not getting the performance that you want. But if you're a PC player, even with like a 4080, sorry, you know,
yeah. It's true. And that's a problem right now in the games industry. But Redfall's issues aren't just performance-wise. They're so fundamentally ingrained into the game that it's going to take Arkane years to be able to fix this game. And I know that they probably, you know, Phil Spencer said in that interview with Kinda Funny that they are looking to get Redfall to the place they want it to be. But I'm kind of hoping that they just went, you know, we screwed the pooch in this one. Like, this didn't work out. Instead of spending years and all this, like, millions of pounds of resources and whatnot, like, let's just move on to the next game and do it right. Because it is going to take Arkane years to get Redfall to the place where they want it to be. And I'm not doubting that they can do that. I'm not. But I would just prefer Arkane to just place their resources into, move on, place their resources somewhere else and do something exceptional. Get over it.
Come on, guys. It's not like you spent hundreds of hours working on that. Come on.
No, it's exactly...
New one.
It's exactly that. But I know it sounds cruel to say. It does. Yeah. But when, you know, when it's come out and it's been such a strangely just, like, horrible experience across the board, like, somebody needs to make the decision and say, is this worth our time? And I think that's what Xbox is lacking. They're lacking that person that says, you know, that played Redfall 6 months before it launched and went, there's something not right about this game. Like, you know, not talking about its frame rates, not talking about anything like that. Just saying, I see what you've done here, but this
there's
isn't it.
Missing.
Exactly, there's something missing.
There's a soul missing.
Exactly.
Its biggest sort of sin in my mind is it's boring. It doesn't feel like it's like I don't know if even as you say even if they spent years on it can you get past the idea that it is essentially not fun to jump into that open world and kick around in it, because there's been so many games where people go it's broken but it's really fun, and that's sort of like the saving grace of, you know, it'll be great in like a year's time, a year and a half's time. It happened with you know, if we're talking co-op sort of horde games or anything like that, Vermintide 2, I think, is a great example of a game that is now incredible, but at launch was a pretty big mess. And that's because it had that core element of killing rats is really fun, you know, and sort of fighting past that. But if you go to Redfall, you find that the town itself just feels as dead as they sort of want it to make out to be, I guess, in a way. It's really it's a sin for Arkane to make something that's bland, I think, considering the previous work of the studio.
I would agree, and that to me is the way that the console wars are going. Because, and again, I never like to throw Nintendo into the same pool as Xbox and PlayStation, because
it exists on an island, doesn't
it does,
really?
It does.
I mean, it makes Mario games and party games and Zelda, you know, gets as you'll be able to read right now, you know. Actually, I won't go into Zelda. Let's call that.
We'll get
there in a bit. You know, carry on.
But yeah, but that's the exact point, is that, as you say, Nintendo exists on an island. Nintendo has done their thing for so many years their own way. And they're going to continue doing it their own way for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Until the sun bursts and the world is engulfed in flames, Nintendo will be making Mario Party 27, you know.
Exactly that. So it's difficult to throw Nintendo into the same pool as this console wars argument, because they've never been competing with the likes of Sony and Xbox. But yeah, when you look at this current generation, we are like almost 3 years into this current generation of consoles. And while I love the Xbox Series X, I absolutely adore it. I think it's a great console. I just can't understand why I'd recommend an Xbox Series X over a PlayStation 5 right now. I really don't. Like, sure, like, smart delivery and the way that, you know, all your data on your Xbox Series games can translate to your PC games and stuff like that, that's all really cool. It's all really great.
But you also need a powerful PC. Then.
Well, true,
you need a gaming PC to then work with that.
True, but the thing is that you also need games to play.
Yeah.
You know? And you can play the majority of the games that are released on Xbox on PlayStation, but what you can't do is you can't play the PlayStation exclusive games on Xbox. So, you know, essentially what you've given up, you've given up God of War, you've given up Horizon, you've given up Gran Turismo, you've given up Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, you've given up all these great games for Redfall and Minecraft
Redfall.
Legends.
Yeah,
and I just
hey, watch out with the Minecraft Legends slander.
I'm sure it's a great game. I'm sure that you know, like, loads of people. I'm sure that a lot of Minecraft fans are going to enjoy it. But, but
the army of 9-year-olds will be at your door.
They will.
You know,
they will.
If you find yourself slandering Minecraft Legends again,
they will. It's just a really unusual game for me. You know what I mean? Like,
no idea why they made it, but
exactly. That's the thing. That's another reason why I think Xbox needs this, like, this executive person to make these sort of wider decisions, because I don't understand who Minecraft Legends is
for. A job? Are you just offering yourself up as this guy?
Maybe I am. Maybe I am. But somebody at Mojang pitched Minecraft Legends, and people thought it was a great idea. And
nobody took them away to an asylum after that.
I just don't understand who the game's tailored towards. You know, Minecraft's great because of its creativity and all the crazy things you can do in the world. And then you have this weird action strategy game that you can't do that stuff in. And it's just so different and unusual. And I'm not sure who it's meant for. And meanwhile, you know, Sony's greenlighting all these incredible sequels. You know, we've got Spider-Man coming up in probably sort of November time or whatever, and it's probably going to be one of the biggest games of the entire year. And then Insomniac, the same studio who did Spider-Man, is doing the Wolverine game, which again looks so freaking cool, and I can't wait to see what they've got. And I just don't know what Xbox has to fight that. So it's a difficult one to say. It's a very difficult one to say.
Obsidian Games, I guess. Obsidian, I mean, can they, you know, save the day? Because if Bethesda can't, if Starfield can't, which is looking a bit, you know, not likely, but I'd say possible, you know, pretty heavily possible at this point that Starfield can't do it. Maybe Avowed comes in and is really, really good and, you know.
But that's exactly the problem, though.
Because we just keep doing that in a cycle, don't we? We just keep going, maybe Starfield saves the day. And then maybe it's Avowed, or maybe it's Fable, or maybe it's, you know, all these games that just...
But that's exactly the point.
When do we stop huffing the copium?
Because we don't know anything about these games, because they were all announced, and that was it. You know, Xbox has been terrible, like truly awful, at actually showing off and telling us more information about the games they have coming up. Because after this year, we got Starfield, we got Forza Motorsport, and then, yes, they have this massive slate of things they've announced. You know, Hellblade's coming at some point. That's another one of the ones that they're really selling and really pushing Hellblade. But after that, you know, Avowed, Everwild, Contraband, all these games. But guess what? Aside from those announcement trailers, I don't know anything about them. I have absolutely no clue about them. I don't know when they're going to be coming. I don't know what the story's going to be. I don't know anything because Xbox doesn't tell us at all. And it's difficult to stay excited about them when there's been such varying quality of releases, and then they refuse to elaborate on anything they do announce. I don't know where to put my faith in Microsoft and Xbox right now.
Well, some people are still doing it. You look on Twitter, you will see people saying, Avowed will be the greatest game of all time. And they will list like six things that haven't been confirmed. They'll be like, amazing open world, the best story in gaming. And you'll see it. You will see, you know, a few... like 100 people still interact with those posts and still post those posts. Like, yes, this is it. This is the one. Because there is still a faith there, I think. It just needs to be rewarded. It needs to be positively rewarded in a good game, in a genuinely solid game that we can go, do you know what? This is why you buy an Xbox Series X. Because in the Series S department, I think people will buy that because it's the cheapest console going that still gives you the next-gen experience. Quote, air quote, while, you know, giving you the access to Game Pass. There is nothing wrong with that. If you want to get into gaming at this sort of point, an Xbox Series S is a pretty good option. PS5 is still very expensive compared to a Series S. A PC is going to be massively expensive, and a Series X, again, more expensive. So if you want the entry level, you just like gaming, you don't even want to get involved with this, you're probably not listening to the podcast right now, if that's you. But if you're not really that, if you're the type of person who's not really involved in gaming, then but you still want to play the odd game, that's the Series S. But the Series X, you need that game that's really like, wow, I need a Series X for this. Because otherwise, as you say, you just go, tell you what, I'll take that game. And, you know, say if it's like Jedi Survivor, right? You'd take that on the PS5 because then you can also play God of War. There needs to be that reason. There needs to be something like that. And we also need to know that that is going to be the reason months beforehand. We need to be able to look at like when we were looking at God of War Ragnarok, people knew that unless something had gone seriously wrong, unless Sony Santa Monica had thrown itself down the stairs, that there would be... that this game was going to be something special. And I think we need to know that without thinking, good God, they could really get this wrong in the back of our minds constantly.
I mean, and it's worth mentioning as well with a game like Everwild, that's rare, right?
Or is that Avowed? I believe so. Avowed is Obsidian.
Everwild's rare, because Rare has a ton of different things, but, you know, I love Rare. Rare's a great developer. Rare makes Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves is great. But Sea of Thieves wasn't always great. Sea of Thieves launched and Sea of Thieves was a pretty bare bones game. And it took them years to make it good. And when I think of Redfall and where that currently stands, I just think of Sea of Thieves. And like, yeah, I don't doubt that, you know, given time, given 5 years, Redfall will be great. It probably will. But I'm not waiting 5 years. I'd rather they commit the resources to something else. But anyway, that brings me on to an interesting point that you were mentioning there about the Series S. Would you argue that the Series S is also a detrimental factor to Xbox's current strategy? I.e., with developers having to create their games not just for this powerful Series X, but for the technologically inferior Series S. Would you say that's a reason for Xbox's current like kind of demise for this generation?
I remember reading something last year that developers were getting a bit agitated with the fact that the Series S was still being considered this next-gen machine, because then you would have to make next-gen games that have to accommodate for a console that is much less powerful than not only a Series X, but a PS5 as well. So for third-party developers, that makes it a pretty tough case, because then, you know, could this be the reason why we're seeing a lot of 30 FPS ports still on console, even though I remember when the Xbox Series S and PS5 were getting advertised, they were like, this is it, this is where we step up to 120 FPS, guys. Don't you worry. And then most of the games that look amazing on like next-gen machines are still going, oh, actually, we need 30, because otherwise we might, you know, might run a bit hot on the Series S. So I don't know if it's one of those things, isn't it, where it's great for the consumer that wants it, but for the person that really wants to have that next gen experience, I still 3 years into this generation and I still don't feel like we're fully in it. It's fully taking its strides. Whereas, you know, to really see those experiences, I think this year we're starting to see it. I think with games like, you know, God of War Ragnarok hits last year, but with games like God of War Ragnarok and Jedi Survivor, and even Forspoken visually, mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk about Forspoken's gameplay and story and the things that, you know, didn't necessarily give it the big win in the critical sphere, but Forspoken visually is very, very, looks very, very next gen. And yet again, a lot of those games end up either just going for the PlayStation or, you know, PlayStation PC, or they go for like a, you know, release on all, then you can tell that the Series S is sort of slightly dragging it down a bit. I don't want to say it's a bad thing, because it's really good for a lot of consumers. It is really good for people who don't want to spend that much money. But at the same time, could it have stopped us seeing the potential of fully next-gen stuff? I don't know, because we're still seeing some good games. It's hard. It's really hard to say whether this is a good or a bad console, because it's good for some people. But it might be annoying for developers at the end of the day to have to go, tell you what, this machine that is not as good as, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's about the power of an Xbox One X, if not a bit less.
So it'd be, if I had to guess, it's probably a little bit more powerful than a One X.
A little bit more.
But I think there's a good way to frame this. I think that the Xbox Series S is a good entertainment console, but a bad games console. And that's my sort of approach to it. And I would really
have to connect with it then.
Yeah, perhaps they should. Well, actually, you know what? Let's not bring back the Kinect. You know what? I'm just going to throw that out there. Let's never bring back the Kinect. But no, the point is that
Kinect Star Wars 2 isn't coming out.
I hope it isn't. I really hope it isn't. There's apparently a lot of Star Wars games in development, so you never know.
It could be one of them.
But no,
fingers crossed.
I would really like Microsoft to share their sales statistics for like specifically for consoles, to see how, you know, what ratio of the Series S to Series X is like when it comes to sales. Because, you know, if the Series S sells a boatload, then it's hard to say that it's anything but a success, because, you know, people are buying it. But if it doesn't sell many, if, you know, if it say that it sells 20% of the consoles that the Series X sells, then you have to look at it and think, this has been an experiment that probably hasn't worked out for Xbox, because while it has appealed to that small amount of consumers, it's probably held back the Xbox generation a little bit. So I don't know. It's an interesting one. Either way, I think it's fair to say, and I think we've come to the conclusion, that the console wars isn't dead. Although, as a consumer, I would wish it is dead, so that we can move on and get, you know, cross-platform everywhere. I'd love to be able to play God of War on an Xbox Series X, that sort of stuff. It'll never happen. But
it's a bit of a Cold War now, I think. If we had to put a line on it, I'd say it's a bit more of a Cold War. It doesn't feel much as if they go head-to-head and they're like, in the same way that it was the Xbox One and the PS4 and it was, which one are you going to buy?
Mm-hmm.
It's more now, I think I'm more of an Xbox guy, so I'm going to stick with that, and I like Game Pass. But if I'm going to go PlayStation, I guess, you know. It doesn't feel like you're really, you know, it doesn't feel like kids at school are going to be kicking each other out of friend groups over their Xbox versus PlayStation.
Exactly. And I've, you know, that when I was going through school, that's exactly what it was. You were either a PlayStation gamer or you're an Xbox gamer.
Yeah.
It was like the Jets and the Sharks, you know, West Side Story.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it's like that these days. If anything, it's probably PlayStation or Nintendo. Which again is weird because Nintendo's never really been part of that conversation. But I think this is actually a really good point to segue a little bit, because as we've been recording this, the embargo has lifted for the Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom review.
Oh my God, Ben, if someone wanted to read a review on that, where could they do that?
Well, that's a funny thing to say. You can read it on your local Game Reactor region, of which, you know, you can find all of our thoughts. You can find a video review. You can find all this good stuff, and including when, by the time you see this podcast, there will also be guides and all these good stuff available to read and to delve into. But I haven't played the game yet. That was your area of expertise for this year. And before we get on to your opinions about the game, I want to just tell you a number, and I want you to guess what this number is. All right, you ready? 97.
Yes. Is that the Metacritic score for The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom?
As
we stand on the 11th of May 2023 at 13:53 p.m.
That's exactly correct. 97. Oh, that is one of the highest scores I've ever seen on Metacritic. Now, we knew it was going to be high because Breath of the Wild was great, and it was hard to say that this game is going to drop below. But if I'm right in saying, looking at Metacritic right now, it's been awarded the number one best Switch game of 2023, which isn't really a surprise. But yeah, 97 out of 100. And that is based on, I think, 60 critic reviews, actually, it says. All of them positive. Not a single one of the critic reviews on Metacritic were negative. Just to point that out. The lowest one that I can see are sort of 80s. And that's... And bear in mind, actually, I know that one of them is Eurogamer. I know that Eurogamer recently changed their rating scale to a 1 to 5 star category. So that's like 4 out of 5 stars. Yeah. Which, again, is a pretty good score, all things considered. Yeah. But yeah, it's been rated incredibly highly. 97 out of 100. Tell me about your experience with the game. Is it something we should all be really excited about?
I think so. I think if the 97 is anything, I mean, myself, I gave it a 10 out of 10. I adored The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. I was actually fairly new to Zelda. I'm not a full Zelda guy. I'm not as in, you know, I've not been playing it since the original games. I think my first game was the train one. I know this is going to make me sound like such a fake fan. The train one where it's Toon Link on the DS. That was probably my first. And then Twilight Princess on the Wii. I think. Let's go with that, yeah? Okay, those are games. And so Breath of the Wild was probably like a really, I would say the first one where I really sunk my teeth into it and got really, really involved. And I thought it was very, very good. And yet, I think if there was any way that you can improve Breath of the Wild's formula, it's done through The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Initially, I thought, oh, it's playing a bit on the same sort of thing, because you start, you know, not getting into any spoilers, but this is the first 5 minutes or so of the game. You start in a very similar sort of scenario that you start in Tears of the Kingdom, in Breath of the Wild. And I thought, well, are they, you know, how much are they going to do to keep it different? And they do an amazing amount. This game gives, you know, you 3 layers of Hyrule to explore. And not only does it just let you walk around and do stuff, it really, something that really sort of amazed me about it is the story that this time is really, really engaging. There is a lot of sort of, there's almost a 2 sides to the story, in that the one that you make as Link and the one that you see through memories and other cutscenes in Zelda, which really, really sort of keeps you interested in a way that Breath of the Wild story sort of didn't. You were just sort of playing it to eventually find Zelda and take down the bosses, in my opinion. and you got cutscenes that were based around the old characters who died and used to control the beasts, and they told you about, you know, how it's your destiny to save the world, yada, 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 usual stuff. Whereas this one, you get to see a concurrent story, but you also get to see it in different disjointed bits. It's a bit like that Netflix show that, what was the name of that show that you could watch any episodes in order?
Kaleidoscope, was that it?
Kaleidoscope, there we go. Brilliant, you know. It's a bit like if Kaleidoscope actually worked in the way that you experience The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom story. I think it really, really sort of, you feel like you're piecing together this puzzle as you go through it, and you get a different experience from each person. I would say that if you have a Switch and you want to even play a great game on it, I would say Tears of the Kingdom is worth playing. It's even pretty good for people who, I would say, have not played Breath of the Wild, because then you wouldn't even have the initial gripes about it being a bit similar to Breath of the Wild. But yeah, I could go on about it all day, as you can probably see, but read the review if you want more, you know,
One of the things actually about the game that has always sort of, I guess, concerned me a little bit is that it's very focused on creativity. All these abilities, Ultra Hand, and was it Fuse, where you can
mix items
together and create mix like cars weapons. And rocket ships and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I've always been concerned that I'm not going to be creative enough for it. You know, does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, I completely get that. I am an idiot. I am an absolute idiot when it comes to stuff like this. You will see within the week's end, by Sunday, you will see someone on Twitter having created something incredible. And yet, but even with like sort of even with my complete lack of understanding of what would really work together, I have still managed to create some pretty fun and interesting things with Ultra Hand. And Ultra Hand works pretty much like the Garry's Mod physics gun on your hand. You can just, anything that isn't tight, nailed down to the game world, you pick up, you swirl it around and you stick it to something else and you make little cars, little whatevers. I would say, don't worry if you're not getting the, you know, your dream Bugatti on Tears of the Kingdom immediately, because some of the stuff that you'll get you need to explore around the world to find different devices that will help you make better stuff as you go along. So like initially you might be looking at a little glider, whereas over time you will be able to create like an ultra tank that can take out, you know, an entire camp of enemies at a time. But
that's really impressive. Really impressive. It's really exciting. And I think, you know, it's not very often you get a game of this kind of critical acclaim. In fact, on the topic of that, I've got a little bit of another question for you, actually. There are two other games on Nintendo Switch, on Metacritic, that have received a 97 ranking. Could you by any chance guess what they are?
Breath of the Wild?
Yeah, given. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, brilliant. Right, that's one down. how many guesses do I get?
I'll give you three guesses.
Okay, brilliant. Super Mario Odyssey.
Bang, done.
Oh, easy. Let's wrap it up. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll see you again.
Exactly. That's the sort of place that this game sits in. I mean, you know, Tears of the Kingdom sits in that sort of same category as God of War Ragnarok to me, where, you know, you have the format, you have the thing that everyone loved, and all you've done is build on it. So it was difficult for me to see this game to be anything less than astounding. And judging by the 60 or so critic reviews on Metacritic, it seems like it is specific, is exactly that. It's a very exciting game. But again, by the time you see this review, many of you probably have already started your journey through Hyrule and have started building things together and created an Ultra Tank, like Alex said, and ready to blow Bokoblins.
Or a Bugatti.
Yeah. and cause all kinds of havoc. But yeah, if you are interested for further thoughts and opinions on Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, you can find our review. You can find different Game Reactor Network reviews across the Game Reactor wider network. And you can also find some tips and tricks and all this other good stuff to help you get on your way and to make sure that you're ready to undertake this massive adventure. But otherwise, that's about all the time we have today. It's been an interesting one. We talked about pretty much every facet of the games industry. We haven't really talked about movies or the entertainment world all too much, but no doubt we'll pick up on that in the next episode. We might even do a bit of a spoiler cast sort of thing for Zelda in the next one, where we'll talk about
joined by our good friend, Talking about our good friend Dav.
Exactly, exactly. We'll do. We'll bring in our resident Zelda and Nintendo expert to talk all things Zelda and really dish out in this game and talk about why it's so special after it's been out. And we don't want to spoil anything for you now. Put it that way. We'll spoil things in a couple of weeks' time. So prepare for that.
Perhaps you can even tell us about the train game with Cartoon Link is called.
Exactly.
You
know,
you can give us a much better insight than. And me guessing at whatever I might have played in a fever dream as a child.
Exactly. But this has been the Game Reactor Show. Thank you all for watching and, for listening and joining us for the second episode. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time for the third episode, of which you'll be able to find it on your local Game Reactor region. Thank you all for listening and we'll see you all on the next one.
Bye.